Touchstone Pictures. With Sam Rockwell, Mos Def, Zoe Deschanel, Martin Freeman, Bill Nighy, Warwick Davis, Anna Chancellor, Alan Rickman, Helen Mirren, Stephen Fry, and John Malkovich. Spyglass Entertainment. Dolphins perform for a human audience.
It's an important and popular fact that things are not always what they seem. For instance, on the planet Earth, man had always assumed that he was the most intelligent species occupying the planet, instead of the third most intelligent. The second most intelligent creatures were, of course, dolphins, who, curiously enough, had long known of the impending destruction of the planet Earth. They had made many attempts to alert mankind to the danger, but most of their communications were misinterpreted as amusing attempts to punch footballs or whistle for tidbits. So they eventually decided they would leave Earth by their own means. The last ever dolphin message was misinterpreted as a surprisingly sophisticated attempt to do a double backward somersault through a hoop while whistling the Star Spangled Banner. But in fact, the message was this: so long, and thanks for all the fish.
Over cheerful, glossy, long-nosed dolphins careering through bubbly turquoise blue water, Touchstone Pictures and Spyglass Entertainment present a Barbara Birnbaum production. A Hammer and Tongs production. An Everyman Pictures production. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Thanks for all the fish. So sad that it should come to this. We tried to warn you all, but oh dear. You may not share our intellect, which might explain your disrespect for all the natural wonders that grow around you. So long, and thanks for all the fish.
Dolphins wave their fins and dance with synchronized precision.
The world's about to be destroyed. There's no point getting all annoyed.
Lie back and let the planet dissolve. Despite those nets of tuna fleets, we thought that most of you were sweet, especially tiny tots and your pregnant women. So long, so long, so long, so long, so long.
One opens its smiling jaws.
If I had just one last wish, I would like a tasty fish.
If we could just change one thing, we would all have learned to sing.
Based on the book by Douglas Adams, screenplay by Douglas Adams and Kerry Kirkpatrick, and directed by Garth Jennings. By the light of a brilliant full moon, dolphins leap out of the water singly and in pairs. More and more of them jump up into the air, and instead of returning to Earth, they rise higher and higher into the inky, starlit sky.
Salam, 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 salam.
The last dolphin disappears, the stars twinkle and fade, and the sun rises on a pastoral English landscape. A red-breasted robin perches on a post, a hare squints out over long grass.
The extraordinary story of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy begins very simply. It begins with a man.
In an isolated rural cottage, a young man with dark curly hair yawns widely, rubs his eyes, and comes downstairs, banging his head on a low beam.
An Earthman, to be precise, who no more knows his destiny than a tea leaf knows the history of the East India Company.
He makes tea and burnt toast.
His name is Arthur Dent. He is a 5'8" tall ape descendant, and someone is trying to drive a bypass through his house.
Arthur's cottage is surrounded by yellow diggers and bulldozers. Arthur lies in front of a bulldozer and talks into his mobile.
What do I want you to do about it? Well, I want you to find him and tell him that I'm currently lying flat on my back in front of... final hold.
Come off it, Mr. Dent. You can't lie in front of the bulldozers forever.
Oh, well, I'm game. We'll see you rust first.
This bypass has got to be built, and it is going to be built.
Why has it got to be built?
It's a bypass.
You've got to build bypasses. Besides, you should have made your protest months ago. These plans have been on display at the planning office now for a year.
On display? I had to go down to a cellar.
Mr. Dent, have you any idea how much damage this bulldozer would suffer if I just let it roll straight over you?
How much?
None at all.
By a strange coincidence, none at all is exactly how much suspicion the ape descendant Arthur Dent had that one of his closest friends was not descended from an ape, but was in fact from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse.
A man arrives with a trolley of beer.
Arthur!
He heads for the cottage.
Ford! Yes? Here. Oh, there you are. Come, eat.
Drink with me. We gotta talk.
Well, now's not the best time, Ford. They're gonna demolish my home.
Ford rolls his eyes.
You already know? How?
Arthur indicates the bulldozers and men in hard hats.
Oh, they. When you say they, you mean they. Got it. Listen, I got something important I gotta tell you. I gotta tell you right now.
Well, what about my house?
Ford, a slim black man in a white suit and raincoat, glances round, then turns back to Arthur with a penetrating look.
Workers of the earth, I bring good tidings of peanuts and beer.
He doles out the beer and peanuts he bought in the supermarket trolley to the delighted workman and hurries back to Arthur, who's still sitting in front of a bulldozer in his pajamas and drab green dressing gown.
Good, excellent. Come on, let's go to the pub.
Huh?
They say they won't demolish your home until they finish the beers.
Well, can we trust them?
Oh, I trust them to the end of the earth.
How far is that?
About 12 minutes away.
Huh? They arrive at the pump.
Barman, 6 pints of bitter and quickly. Yeah. The world's about to end.
6 pints coming up.
Keep the change. You got about 10 minutes to spend it.
It's 3 pints each at lunchtime.
Arthur, still in his dressing gown, watches Ford down his first pint in one go. Ford, with a foam moustache, glances over at him.
Sorry.
He wipes his mouth.
Time. It's an illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so. And eat those peanuts because you'll need the salt.
But what is going on, Ford?
Arthur.
Ford puts a hand on Arthur's shoulder.
What if I told you I really wasn't from Guildford? I was from a small planet somewhere in the vicinity of Betelgeuse.
Was it the sort of thing you're likely to say?
Remember when we met?
In flashback, Ford stands in the middle of a road, grinning and offering his hand to an oncoming car. Arthur pushes him to safety. They land on top of each other, on the grass verge.
Hey.
Do you think it was a bit strange? He was trying to shake hands with a car.
I assumed you were drunk.
I thought cars were the dominant life form. I was trying to introduce myself. He saved my life that day, and now I'm saving yours.
Let's drink. Must be Thursday. Could never get the hang of Thursdays.
Wait, look, Arthur, if this is about your house...
No, it's not about the house.
Arthur shows Ford a photo stored in his mobile phone of himself and a girl.
Who's he?
She. Tricia McMillan. We met at a fancy dress party.
A flashback to the party.
See, I hate those kind of parties. I'd much rather have stayed at home and, I don't know, ironed me hankies. But anyway, there I was.
Who are you?
Oh! And there she was.
Dent. Arthur Dent.
Oh, no, I mean, who are you?
Oh, the costume, right, Livingston, I presume.
He wears a pith helmet.
Yeah, it's not as clever as Darwin, I know, but it's the best I could do at short notice.
You're the first person who's gotten that right.
Really?
Yes, everyone keeps calling me Santa.
Right.
And I thought the Beagle made it a dead giveaway.
Yes, well, so did I. I guess most of the people who come to these sort of parties are drunken idiots.
What?
I said all these people are idiots. God.
The party revelers stare at Arthur and bearded Tricia. The flashback ends.
That's awkward.
Tell me.
In the flashback, the party spills onto the roof.
She was amazing, though, Ford. Beautiful, witty, mad as a balloon.
I've got to say, without the beard, you look at least 80 years younger.
Maybe, de-evolving.
Well, I feel I should tell you that I do not date single-celled organisms.
She leans forward and kisses him on the cheek.
Let's go somewhere.
Yeah, definitely. Where do you have in mind?
Madagascar.
Is that new club on Dean Street?
No, it's a country off the coast of Africa.
That Madagascar? Why are we waiting here? Wait a sec.
He dons his helmet.
Go.
She waits, smiling expectantly.
God, you're serious.
He takes the helmet off.
I can't go to Madagascar.
Why not?
Well, because I just, you know, you're really serious.
Yeah, I want to go somewhere I've never been, and I'd like to go with you, so... What do you say, Dr. Livingston?
I say that's an extraordinary proposition. I can't go. I mean, I've got a job.
Quit. Get a new one when you come back.
I don't even know your real name.
Ow.
Ow.
Trisha McMillan.
Well,
Magistral Tricia Macmillan. I have a proposition for you. Why don't we go somewhere a little closer first, say Cornwall, and we'll see how it goes.
She nods glumly.
Right. Of course. Cornwall.
Hey, excuse me.
A man in a velvet coat and dark glasses strolls up.
Does this guy bore you? Why don't you talk to me instead? I'm from a different planet.
He strokes back his long blonde hair and giggles.
It's true. You want to see my spaceship?
He winks, and Tricia grins with delight.
You want to see my spaceship? I mean, really, what kind of a chat-up line is that?
That does happen. Speaking of...
We've got 2 minutes. Drink up.
Arthur looks up.
It's my house.
Arthur rushes out, forward watched with tipsy interest by a middle-aged woman, drains his last pint, stretches out his arms and stuffs his pockets with peanuts.
People of Earth, a round of drinks for everyone on me.
Oh, thank you, mate. So you really think the world's going to end?
Yes.
Shouldn't we lie down or put a paper bag over our heads or something?
Well, if you'd like.
Will it help?
Not at all.
Ford runs from the pub.
Last order, Ted.
Arthur rushes up to what remains of his cottage. The workmen are swarming over the rubble in their yellow jackets as the JCBs pull down the last few bits of wall. He puts his hands to his head in despair and staggers through the ruins.
What is that?
Run! Look out!
The workmen look up at the sky over Arthur's shoulder and start to flee in panic. Arthur ignores them and carries on wandering through the rapidly emptying demolition site. A huge shadow passes over the rubble, but Arthur is too wrapped up in his own concerns to notice the enormous, shabby spacecraft above his head. At his feet, the headline of a copy of The Times says, "Dolphins vanish." Ford trots into what's left of the bathroom.
Aha! Towel!
He grabs hold of a towel.
Arthur!
Arthur points.
What the hell are those things? They're ships from a Vulcan constructor fleet. I picked up their signal this morning. Here, you'll need this.
Ford gives him the towel.
What are you doing?
Hang on, we're hitching a ride.
The ring on Ford's raised thumb ignites. A microphone goes live.
People of Earth, this is Prosthetic Vogon Jeltz of the Galactic Hyperspace Planning Council. As you are probably aware, plans for the development of the outlying regions of the galaxy involve the building of a hyperspace express route through your star system. And your planet is one of those scheduled for demolition.
Cities worldwide are seized with panic. Outside Jodrell Bank, sheep bleat. And in Arthur's pub, the regulars lie down with paper bags over their heads.
There's no point acting all surprised about it. The plans and demolition orders have been on display at a local planning office in Alpha Centauri for 50 Earth years. If you can't be bothered to take an interest in local affairs, that's your own account. A pathetic bloody planet. I've no sympathy at all.
A subtitle over the thick-lipped creature's next utterance reads, "Commence demolition." Ford stands amid the rubble with one arm tight around Arthur's shoulder, the other reaching skywards, thumb outstretched, with a strange thumb ring emitting a beam of golden light that points up towards the nearest Vogon spaceship. Other spaceships hover nearby, each one like an enormous solid concrete slab many miles high. Thousands of them arrange symmetrically around the globe until it looks like an orange stuck with cloves. The last Vogon constructor ship drops into place and... explodes into a billion tiny fragments that twinkle and flash as they slowly drift off into space, becoming indistinguishable from the shimmering starfield behind them. Out of the black nothingness, a slim, rectangular, metallic grey object, gliding weightlessly along, fills the darkness until it entirely blots out the stars. Shadows lengthen as the object slowly turns, and another side comes into view, with chunky red letters edged with gold, spelling out the title, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. As the object continues to rotate, it looks more and more like a book or a laptop computer, with a logo of a raised thumb superimposed upon a ringed planet on its cover. The book opens, revealing a double-page computer screen on which graphics appear illustrating the chosen entry.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a wholly remarkable book. Perhaps the most remarkable, certainly the most successful book ever to come out of the great publishing corporations of Ursa Minor. More popular than the Celestial Home Care Omnibus, better selling than 53 More Things to Do in Zero Gravity, and more controversial than Ulon Kalufid's trilogy of philosophical blockbusters Where God Went Wrong, Some More of God's Greatest Mistakes, and Who Is This God Person Anyway? It's already supplanted the Encyclopedia Galactica as the standard repository of all knowledge and wisdom for two important reasons. First, it's slightly cheaper. And second, it has the words, "Don't Panic," printed in large, friendly letters on its cover.
The words "Don't Panic" are seen on the back cover as Arthur reads it, lying next to Ford, in the bowels of the Vogon ship.
So you're not from Guildford. Which would explain the accent, which I've always wondered about. And you're not an out-of-work actor, but rather a writer for this book thing.
It's good, huh?
I don't feel well. I need a cup of tea.
If I asked where we were, would I regret it?
Oh, we're safe for now.
Good.
We're in the washroom on one of the ships of the Vogon Constructor Fleet.
Oh, get me home, Ford.
Arthur, your home is...
Oh, my God, my home. My home was demolished.
Ford finds a light switch revealing a squalid, grimy washroom. He comes over to Arthur.
You don't remember.
He puts his hand on Arthur's shoulder.
Okay, Arthur, I've got something to tell you. It's unfortunate, but it's true. Your whole planet has been blown up.
He looks at Arthur uncertainly, gives him a manly hug, and wanders off, taking a towel out of the bag he carries slung over his shoulder. Arthur's befuddled eyes follow him.
Blown up.
Ford wraps his towel around a pipe, braces his foot against the wall and pulls. The pipe doesn't move.
Couldn't you have done something? I saved your life.
Okay, that makes us even. It's a tough galaxy. You want to survive out here, you gotta know.
He hands Arthur a towel.
Where your towel is. Okay, give me a hand over here.
They go to another pipe.
Careful, it's hot. We've got to get off this ship before the Vogons find us. Vogons, they hate hitchhikers. Pull.
The pipe comes away from the wall. Ford sticks his thumb with a glowing gold ring up the pipe.
Now we'll get a signal. What is a Vogon?
Ask the guide. Say Vogons.
Arthur opens the hitchhiker's guide.
Vogons.
An animation pops up.
Vogons are one of the most unpleasant races in the galaxy. Not evil, but bad-tempered, bureaucratic, officious, and callous. They wouldn't even lift a finger to save their own grandmothers from the ravenous bug-bladder beast of Tral without orders, signed in triplicate, sent in, sent back, queried, lost, found, subjected to public inquiry, lost again, and finally buried in soft peat for 3 months and recycled as firelighters. On no account should you allow a Vogon to read poetry to you.
Arthur anxiously rubs his forehead.
They can't think, they can't imagine. Most of them can't even spell, they just run things.
On the bridge, a knobbly-faced Vogon looks at his TV monitors. He sees Ford and Arthur.
And if we don't get a ride soon, you won't need the guide to tell us just how unpleasant the Vogons can be. They've already destroyed a planet today. That always makes them a little...
Arthur winces as sound erupts from a tannoy. Ford reaches into his bag and brings out a glass jar.
What is that?
Put this in your ear.
The jar contains a small yellow fish. Ford rams it into Arthur's ear.
We have unwittingly picked up a couple of hitchhikers.
The fish is translating for you.
The Babel fish is small, yellow, leech-like, and probably the oddest thing in the universe. It feeds on brainwave energy, absorbing unconscious frequencies and excreting a matrix of conscious frequencies to the speech centers of the brain. The practical upshot of which is that if you stick one in your ear, you instantly understand anything said to you in any language.
A booted Vogon guard strides in, huge, hunched and bleary-eyed. The bulbous creature has rubbery skin, thick lips, and a nose in the center of its forehead.
Resistance is useless.
The Vogon and his fellow guard lead Ford and Arthur, their hands manacled, down a corridor.
I'm coming.
Here we go. Look lively.
A bulkhead door rises up to the ceiling. The guards push Ford and Arthur into a dingy square room where other hunched Vogons are gathered. More look down from tiered galleries around the walls. looking from a distance like thick-set nuns. The Vogon captain is fishing with a rod in murky water in a tank under a raised metal grating. He hooks a crab. He picks up a mallet-like object and brings it down on the crab. The other crabs watch their mate's squashed demise, their eyes out on stalks, and hurriedly sink back under the water. The metal grating slams down over the tank. A hooded minion sidles up.
Hitchhikers!
Arthur and Ford are tied to two huge square pillars in the middle of the room, while a long telescopic tube shoots down from the ceiling high above, past gallery upon gallery of watching Vogons. The captain, wearing the Vogon equivalent of a gown over a grey pinstripe suit, his blubbery head capped with a judicial wig above bushy grey eyebrows, unhooks a microphone from the bottom of the tube, rises from his chair, and waddles slowly towards the two captives. He peers closely at Arthur, brings out a book of poetry, and clears his throat.
Oh, frittled grunt ugly!
No, really, you don't have to read. We've put you through enough trouble already.
As the Vogon recites, Ford writhes and rolls his eyes. Arthur, his chin bound with tape, blinks with astonishment.
Vogon poetry is widely accepted as the third worst in the universe. The second worst is that of the Asgoths of Kriya. During a recitation by their poet master, Grunthos the Flatulent, of his poem Ode to a Small Lump of Green Putty I Found in My Armpit One Midsummer Morning, four of his audience died of internal hemorrhaging. And the president of the Mid-Galactic Arts Nobbling Council survived by gnawing one of his own legs off.
Oh, I will rend thee in these gabblewarts with my verbal crunching.
The absolute worst poetry was written by Paul and Nancy Millstone Jennings of Sussex. Luckily, it was destroyed when the Earth was.
See if I don't.
Arthur, slack-jawed, looks at Ford, whose mouth hangs limp and eyes are almost shut.
So, Earthlings, I present you with a choice. Either die in the vacuum of space, or tell me what you thought of my poem.
With a glance at Ford.
I rather liked it.
The Vogon purses his lips.
It's contact, right? I'm with it.
Some of the words I didn't understand, but found the imagery quite effective.
Continue.
Well, yes, interesting rhythmic devices, which seemed to counterpoint the underlying metaphor of the humanity of...
Vogonity
of the poet's soul.
The Vogon captain lowers his huge head and peers into Arthur's face.
So, what you're saying is, I write poetry because, underneath this mean, callous, heartless exterior, I just want to be loved.
Ford prompts Arthur.
Yes. Please.
Ah.
The Vogon captain straightens up.
Throw them off the ship!
Vogon guards pull Ford and Arthur away from the pillars, escort them to a large airlock, shove them inside, and close the door.
Resistance is useless.
The door knocks grind shut.
Get a job! Wash your filthy hands!
Don't panic.
So this is it.
Arthur's on his knees.
We're gonna die.
Ford stands beside him.
Yeah. We're gonna die. No. What's this?
Ford goes over to a panel by the outer door, presses buttons, and turns knobs.
This is nothing. Yeah, we're gonna die.
He walks back into the middle of the airlock. Arthur takes his mobile from out of his dressing gown pocket. Ford dabs Arthur's face with his towel.
You're sweating.
Arthur looks at Ford, then down at the mobile in his hands, holding it out so that Ford can see the picture of Trisha on the screen.
Would you like a hug?
No.
Warning lights on the outer airlock door flash. The two friends look at each other and Ford puts his hand on Arthur's shoulder. They face the door. The floor beneath their feet vanishes and they drop out of the bottom of the ship into space.
Space, says the introduction to the Hitchhiker's Guide, is big. Really big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. And so on. It also says that if you hold a lung full of air, you can survive in the total vacuum of space for about 30 seconds. But with space being really big and all, the chances of being picked up within that time are 2^2,079,460,347 to 1 against. Which, by a staggering coincidence, is also the telephone number of the Islington flat where Arthur went to a fancy dress party and met a very nice young woman whom he totally blew it with.
A large, round, white spaceship appears.
Though the planet Earth, the Islington flat, and telephone have all now been demolished, Ford and Arthur were, in fact, rescued.
Ford?
Yes.
I think I'm a sofa.
I know how you feel.
From being sofas, they change back into themselves. On the bridge of the white ship, Trisha, in a white shirt and blue shorts, looks at a screen that says, "Normality restored."
So much for the laws of physics.
And once again, our top story. The sensational theft of the most coveted ship in the universe, the starship Heart of Gold. Stolen at the launch ceremony by none other than Galactic President Seyford Beeblebrox.
In the name of people and freedom and democracy, stuff like that, I hereby kidnap myself, and I'm taking the ship with me!
Seyford watches TV news footage.
Beeblebrox, universally considered to be the dimmest star in several solar systems, is most famous for his controversial defeat of Hummer Kavula, who claimed many thought they were voting for the worst-dressed sentient being in the universe contest.
Seyford has a towel around his head.
Hummer Kavula is, of course, best remembered for his slanderous Don't Vote for Stupid campaign.
Can we put your ego aside for a minute? Something important has happened.
If there's anything more important than my ego on this ship, I want to cut and shut right now. Hey, come on.
Well,
I love it.
Seyfod's just this guy, you know?
Trisha switches off Seyfod's screen.
Hey. I was just watching myself.
The computer says we have a couple of hitchhikers in our receiving bay.
Hitchhikers? Why'd you pick up hitchhikers?
I didn't. The ship did.
He joins her at the flight controls.
Well,
when we engage the improbability drive, this, the big button?
Yeah, I know.
They were picked up here in sector ZZ9 plural Z alpha. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, that's where you picked me up.
What?
On Earth.
That's impossible.
No, just very improbable.
Listen, Slam, I don't have time for this, you know? We got the police of half the galaxy after us. We stopped to pick up hitchhikers. Okay, so 10 out of 10 for style, but...
He pulls her close.
Minus several million for good thinking. You're too gorgeous, baby. Stop it. You're driving me crazy.
He runs off.
Don't. I'll send Marvin.
She presses a button.
Marvin!
A small white robot descends on a white chair.
I think you ought to know I'm feeling very depressed.
Well, we have something that should take your mind off things.
It won't work. I have an exceptionally large mind.
Yeah, we know, but, we need you to go down to the number 2 entry bay and pick up our stowaways and bring them up here.
Just that? I won't enjoy it.
Yeah, well, that's life.
Life? Don't talk to me about life.
Marvin waddles off. As the Heart of Gold continues through space, Vogon generals mark its progress on a plotting table.
Commander Qualtz?
Yes?
We have located the spaceship Heart of Gold and President Beeblebrox.
Where?
Sector ZZ9, plural Z alpha, requesting hyperspace clearance.
Hold your position, Captain, until clearance is granted.
Yes, sir.
Get me Vice President Questrelar.
Commander Qualtz stamps an approval form.
Hyperspace permission granted, Captain.
The captain of the Vogon battle destroyer pushes the throttle forward and the rest of his crew hang onto their seats as the ship judders and lurches into hypospace. Meanwhile, on board the Heart of Gold, the doors of the entry bay 2 open. Ford and Arthur step through cautiously, and the doors close behind them.
Ah.
Arthur looks back.
I think that door just sighed.
Ghastly, isn't it?
They start.
All the doors in this spaceship have been programmed to have a cheerful and sunny disposition.
Marvin waddles forward on his little legs.
Anyway, come on. I've been ordered to take you up to the bridge.
He motions with his gun, then his round head droops.
Ah, please yourselves. Here I am, brain the size of a planet, and they ask me to take you up to the bridge. Call that job satisfaction, because I don't.
Ford and Arthur follow.
You can thank the Sirius Cybernetics Corporation for building robots with GPP.
What's GPP?
Genuine people personalities. I'm a personality prototype. You can tell, can't you?
Back on the bridge, Trisha watches their progress on a bank of TV monitors. She enlarges Arthur's image.
Arthur?
Seyfert calls to her.
Hey, Slam, are you wearing my underwear? Because I'm wearing yours, and they ain't doing the trick. Come on, all right.
She grabs some overalls from a locker.
Oh, for heaven's sake. I brought the aliens. Don't thank me or anything.
Seyfert somersaults in.
Freeze!
Freeze?
Ippity-doo.
I'm a robot, not a refrigerator.
I wasn't talking to you, Giggles.
Oh, why do I bother?
Seyfert.
Ford? Is that Seyfert? You?
Ford! Frank the Beatlex!
Ford and Seyfert embrace.
What the hell are you doing here?
I don't know. I just stuck out my thumb and here I am.
That is so you.
Yeah, look at you. President of the galaxy?
I can't believe you beat Hama Kavula.
You Zarkin fruit.
Hey, come here, come here. Invite me to friend. Arthur, this is Zaphod Beeblebrox. President of the galaxy. He's my cousin. He's a semi half brother.
He shares three of the same mothers as me.
We've met.
Have we? Yeah. I'm sorry, I got a terrible memory for species.
This is him, Ford. Would you like to see my spaceship, bloke?
Ford looks around, as if to say, must have been this spaceship.
Hello, Arthur.
Arthur gapes.
Trisha.
He goes towards Trisha.
How you doing?
Hey, Trillian! This is my semi-half-brother, Ix. I'm sorry. Ford.
Hi.
Trisha glances back at Arthur.
Would you excuse us for a second?
And leads him away into a corner.
You went down to that little planet and you didn't call me?
Sorry, pal, I didn't know. You know, I had a galaxy to run.
Right, Trisha McMillan, right. I think I heard him call you Trillian. Which one of us got the right one?
Oh, I shortened it. Something a little more spacey.
Right, but yes. Well, actually, I was thinking of changing mine to Arthulia.
That's a good one. Well, this is weird. How'd you get here?
Right, I just stuck out my thumb. Here I am.
Right, in your pajamas.
I was in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you know I was here?
Joe, don't flatter yourself. I've got a spaceman too. Yeah, it's
kind of like a dingo. They look over at Ford and Zaphod.
Okay, look. I left you at the party. I feel bad about it, but I was going to call you when I got back.
Well, there is no going back now, is there?
She looks at him blankly.
You do know what happened, don't you?
Hey, no small talk, Trio. We're on the run. Remember, I stole a ship?
Excuse me, mate. We're having a bit of a chat here. Do you mind?
Well, I think the girl's gonna...
A second head pops up under Zaphod's chin.
You blew it with her, Earthman, so shut your face. I kick you in the zaps.
Arthur spars with him.
You want to fight? You want to fight?
Okay.
No, Earthman wants to fight.
No.
I'm just kidding. I'm a kidder. Come on. Let's be friends. Let's connect, you and I.
He thumps Arthur.
Didn't see that one coming, did you? Popped right out of the box. You fox it. Yeah.
Teach your pal a lesson, Ford. He's a guest on my ship.
He's a guest on my ship.
I thought you said you stole it.
Zaphod puts his extra head away.
Stole what? What are we talking about?
Arthur touches his bruised lip. Everyone looks up at the sound.
Oh, that doesn't sound good.
A Virgon ship appears behind the Heart of Gold. Trisha goes over to Arthur.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm just fabulous, thanks, Trill.
Hey, baby, little help over here. I think I'm in over my head. I'll take care of this. Good talk, Quan. Do I have to do everything? Yes, I do. Hey, Slim, this is really pretty.
Don't!
Woo! They're on her tail. Fire a gun. Launch a missile. Do some damage.
As Zaphod's two heads and three arms spar with each other, the Vogon Battle Destroyer, followed by 99 others, closes in on the Heart of Gold.
Ow! Stop that! Ow! Just kidding, I love it rough. Hit me, baby!
Computer?
Hi there! I'm Eddie, your shipboard computer. I'm just pleased as punch to report that it's a fleet of 100 Vogon Battle Destroyers. They're sending you a message.
This is Vice President Crestula Rontok. I am speaking to the kidnapper of the president.
She digs me. Check it out.
Surrender the stolen vessel at once, or we will take action as defined and permitted by...
Commander Quartz looks over her shoulder.
Section 1-8 of the Galactic Interstellar Space Bylaw.
Zaphod, please come back now. This is ridiculous.
Leave to hyperspace! Come on!
Oh, sure thing, fella.
Eddie the computer puts the Heart of Gold into hyperspace and it vanishes. Commander Quartz and Raven-haired Vice President Rontok watch in their monitor.
No. Did they have proper hyperspace authorization?
No, Commander.
Quartz presses a button.
Bring me the request to pursue fugitive forms.
A Vogon minion runs through the doors.
Orlin! Here's the form, sir! Come on, give me a knife.
So you long for the ride? Or am I just dropping you somewhere?
Zaphod mixes drinks.
Yes.
Where are you going? Where am I going?
Trisha is with Arthur.
You okay?
Yeah. I don't suppose there's any tea on this spaceship, is there?
Yes, there is. Come on, I'll show you the kitchen.
When you see what I'm about to show you, you'll beg me to take you with us.
The best drink in existence is the Pan-Galactic Gargle Blaster, the effect of which is like having your brain smashed out by a slice of lemon wrapped around a large gold brick.
Arthur wanders around the spacecraft.
Belch, hold on 1 second.
Zaphod skids up to Arthur.
Hey, Ape-Man, Earth, dude. I'm sorry, what was your name again? Arthur. Right, gorgeous. No hard feelings, okay? Sorry to hear about your planet. Nicole?
Earth.
Yeah, I liked Earth. Got these boots on Earth. Listen, don't mention it to the girl, okay? Because if you do,
I'll pull your spleen out through your throat.
He pushes his second head back into his collar.
Okay. Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Good stuff. Like those jammies.
Zaphod goes back to Ford.
Hey, Zaphod. What's with the two-head thing?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, you can't be president with a whole brain. That's crazy.
Oh, so you carved it up.
Yes.
The parts of my personality weren't exactly what you call presidential, you know what I mean?
No,
you know what I'm talking about.
In the kitchen, brown liquid bubbles into a glass from a machine.
Your tea is ready.
Trisha watches Arthur pick up the cocktail glass, sip at the foaming liquid, and gag. Grimacing, he hurriedly puts the glass down.
I suppose I should have said it resembles tea.
So, two heads is what does it for a girl? Yeah, I mean, if I'd had two heads or, I don't know, three.
Or your own spaceship.
Anything else he's got two of?
Come on, Arthur, don't be like that.
Well, what am I supposed to be like? You know, green? Bleeping? I can fold my eyelids inside out if you like.
Okay, look. Do you see this?
She points to another machine.
This detects what you're craving and makes it for you.
Enjoy.
She sticks her head inside. A cream donut drops onto a plate below.
Do you see this?
She picks up a knife with a blade like a lightsaber.
This toasts bread while you're slicing it. We're on a spaceship, Arthur. In space. I told you I wanted to get away.
To Madagascar, that was some sort of test. And I failed.
How badly does it hurt?
It doesn't feel great.
No, I mean your chin.
Ah.
I might have an aspirin.
Right.
She knocks over her bag. As she reaches for it, two white mice fall out.
Hey!
And scuttle away along the floor.
Trisha, Trillian, sorry, there's something I have to tell you.
Please, don't.
Showtime, Trill!
Trisha hurries downstairs into the main chamber where the men are drinking. Zaphod holds a small transparent cube in his hands.
That's I'm going right. to set up. Buttons aren't toys.
Buttons aren't toys. Anyway, when I saw what I'm about to show you, that's when I realized why I had to do what I did to my brain. I think it's all a little shaky.
He slips the cube into a slot.
I've seen it. It's rubbish.
A logo appears on a screen and the words Megrathian Public Archive. A film begins.
Many millions of years ago, a race of hyper-intelligent, pan-dimensional beings got so fed up with the constant bickering about the meaning of life that they commissioned two of their brightest and best to design and build a stupendous supercomputer to calculate the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
Oh, Deep Thought, we want you to tell us the answer.
The answer to what?
The answer to life, the universe, everything. We'd really like an answer. Something simple.
I have to think about that. Return to this place in exactly 7.5 million years.
The two little girls look puzzled.
Is it finished? No, there's more. They go back.
What, 7.5 million years later?
That's right. They do.
On the screen, vast crowds waving banners throng towards the huge bronze oracle perched high on its stone platform above the jungle. Priests open ceremonial gates, and the two white-clad, beady-eyed little girls, their hair now white, place their white-gloved hands on an altar in front of the giant fount of wisdom.
Deep Thought, do you have
an answer for you? Yes, but you're not going to like it.
It doesn't matter. We must know it.
All right. The answer to the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything is...
Flashbulbs pop, banners flutter, giant foam fingers are waved. People with Think Deep on their orange t-shirts jump up and down excitedly.
42.
The people scowl in disappointment and anger.
42?
Yes, yes, I thought it over quite thoroughly. It is, it's 42.
Rabbit!
It would have been simpler, of course, to have known what the actual question was.
But it was the question. The ultimate question. Of everything.
That's not a question. Only when you know the question will you know what the answer means.
Give us the ultimate question, then.
I can't. But there is one who can. A computer that will calculate the ultimate question. A computer of such infinite complexity that life itself will form part of its operational matrix. And you yourselves shall take on new, more primitive forms and go down into the computer to navigate its 10 million year program. I shall design this computer for you, and it shall be called...
The film ends with a caption that reads, "Information deleted." Ford turns to Zaphod.
That's it. That's it.
You're looking for the ultimate question.
Yep.
You.
Me.
Why?
No, I tried that. Why? 42 doesn't work. Let's get it ready, baby.
Why? Do you want to know the ultimate question?
Oh, well, partly the curiosity, partly a sense of adventure, but mostly I think it's for the fame and the money.
You're president of the galaxy, aren't you?
That's right, Armin.
Arthur?
Whatever. Presidential fame is temporary. I find the question, that's permanent. It sticks. Plus, everyone thinks you're deep. Win-win.
We just hit that button, and bam! We're at Magrathea, I think. I mean, I don't know. We've hit it twice, and we're still not there. But anyway, you in?
Ford.
Always.
All right!
I want to get off.
Sorry, what exactly are we doing?
Zaphod's second head pops out, and his third hand hits the improbability drive. The ship vanishes.
The infinite improbability drive is a wonderful new method of crossing interstellar distances in a few seconds, without all that tedious mucking about in hyperspace. As the improbability drive reaches infinite improbability, it passes through every conceivable point in every conceivable universe almost simultaneously. In other words, you're never sure where you'll end up or even what species you'll be when you get there. It's therefore important to dress accordingly. The infinite improbability drive was invented following research into finite improbability, which was often used to break the ice at parties by making all the molecules in the hostess's undergarments leap simultaneously 1 foot to the left in accordance with the theory of indeterminacy. Many respectable physicists said they weren't going to stand for that sort of thing, partly because it was a debasement of science, but mostly because they didn't get invited to those sort of parties.
The ship turns into a log, rubber duck, and an anvil before becoming a large ball of wool. Inside, a knitted Zaphod, Trisha, Ford, Marvin, and Arthur look around a knitted bridge.
Wow. Is this going to happen every time we hit that button?
Very probably, yes.
Oh, I think the Earthman's about to be sick.
Whoa, whoa, do it in the trash can, ape man. This ship's brand new.
Sicking up wool.
Oh, come on.
We have normality.
Arthur with wool in his mouth.
Did it work? Who is there?
Yeah, we're here.
Magrathea!
I don't think so.
Magrathea!
Eddie? Ow. What planet are we looking at?
I'm checking for you. Did you just pluck one of my hairs? Off my head?
The two mice scamper away.
Thank you so much for waiting. I'm sorry to disappoint you, gang, but this is not Magrathea. We are currently in orbit around the planet Viltvottle 6.
Zaphod's second head pops out of his neck.
I'm a Magaluna!
Zaphod shakes his fist.
Magrathea's gonna have to wait! I got a score to settle on this planet!
The heart of gold descends towards the planet's surface.
In the beginning, the universe was created. This made a lot of people very angry and has been widely regarded as a bad move. Many races believe that it was created by some sort of god, though the Jatravartid people of Viltvottle 6 firmly believed that the entire universe was in fact sneezed out of the nose of a being called the Great Green Arkel Seizure.
Hama Kavuna!
The Jatravartids, who lived in perpetual fear of the time they called the coming of the Great White Handkerchief, were small blue creatures with more than 50 arms each. They were unique in being the only race in history to have invented the aerosol deodorant before the wheel.
Viltvottle residents greet Zaphod.
Hey, all right, how you doing? All right. Hey, what do we
He takes a jelly from a tray, throws it in the air, and shoots it. Various life forms applaud, including Siamese sextuplet schoolgirls.
Hey, I love you. Mwah. Fantastic. You guys related? Don't go change it. Keep moving.
Arthur, I want a drink. I think I've been here before. Have I been here before?
Ford wanders away from the thronging masses and looks into a nearby building.
I've been here before.
I'm a Kubota!
Come on.
Trisha! Trisha!
Trisha goes after Zaphod and Arthur stumbles after her. They come into a vast church-like building with a congregation dressed in hooded blue and green robes, the more senior among them in red and blue. Zaphod, looking like a dashing pirate, in his high-collared, gold-trimmed, belted black coat, trousers and boots, with his straggly blonde hair, beard and moustache, applauds as the hymn ends. The curly-haired man at the lectern, wearing all three colours, looks across at him with narrowed eyes behind tinted glasses and gives a thin-lipped smile.
Hello, Herman.
A member of the congregation invites Zaphod to sit.
Hey, good to see you. Thanks. All right.
A handkerchief is coming, beloveds. Let us pray the Almighty will exhale a breath of compassion on us all.
Trisha and Arthur squeeze in beside Zaphod.
So that's Hamakavula. I thought he was just swearing.
We lift our noses, clogged and unblown, in reverence to you.
The congregation raise their hands.
Send the handkerchief of blessed ones so that it may wipe us clean.
And tip back their heads.
We ask this and all things in thy precious and alliterative name.
They sneeze and wipe their noses on the head garb of the person in front of them. Hummer touches his nose in blessing. Later, he's alone at dinner.
Bless you.
Zaphod bursts in.
Where are we going? We're in here? All right, I like it. It's big, it's gold, it's fancy. Fancy pants.
Zaphod Beeblebrox, our infamous president. What brings you to our humble planet?
Oh, I think you know why I'm here.
No, I don't think I do.
Oh, I think you don't.
Zaphod strolls nearer.
But we both know you do.
Eloquent as always, Zaphod. Your ability to articulate never ceases to amaze.
It's funny. During the campaign, Hummer, when you were my opponent running against me, you said I was stupid.
Hummer takes off his specs to clean them. His eyes come away with them, leaving only black holes in his head. Zaphod, Arthur, and Trisha stare as Hummer rises, pressing his hands on the end of the vast table, and a dozen golden robotic legs drop down from his torso onto the tabletop. He picks up a glass of blue wine.
The election is ancient history, Zaphod. But...
The legs carry his floating torso.
If memory serves, you won, proving that good looks and charm win over brilliance and the ability to govern.
As he reaches the end of the table, the robot legs get longer so that his head remains at the same height.
And incidentally, you are stupid.
Excuse me. Mr. Hummer, sir, I just want to say there's been some sort of terrible mix-up, hasn't there? Because actually, he's not with us. We came to worship you. He followed us and he grew. He's a tool.
You didn't come halfway across the galaxy to settle a campaign grudge, Zaphod.
Two of Hammer's henchmen see Zaphod.
Why are you here?
Outside, Ford talks to a giant.
Of course not. That's ridiculous. I've been stranded on a strange planet for a number of years. I haven't been avoiding you. You look great. You're doing well. You've grown, obviously.
Wait. We don't know why we're here. We were trying to get to Magrathea and our ship brought us here.
Hummer turns to Trisha.
Very, very improbable.
He pulls off a henchman's nose and presses a button. A drawer opens in the man's chest and Hummer takes out a red glass cube on a chain.
I kept a few souvenirs from my former life, the heady days of space piracy. But even an infinite improbability drive requires coordinates, which I happen to have.
Zaphod lunges.
No. You don't get something for nothing, Zaphod. You must bring me something in return.
What?
A gun.
A gun?
A very special gun designed by the greatest computer ever invented. But the only way to find it is to go to Magrathea.
Fine. I'll get your gun. Just give me the coordinates.
And what will you give me to ensure your return?
My word as president.
No. I need a hostage. Only, what does Zaphod Beeblebrox treasure?
His hand moves towards the second head hidden under Zavod's collar.
Come on.
The second head pops up laughing, then its face falls.
Oh, no.
Hey, take it easy there. Think about this before you do. No, stop it!
The second head is pulled off.
Two heads are better than one!
And put on display.
Double your pleasure! It's not fair! You need me! Come back!
And labeled stupid.
Come back! Don't leave me alone!
Well, Lila, that was fun, wasn't it? And here I was thinking I was the only one who considered your boyfriend a narcissistic moron when apparently the whole galaxy does.
What about you? Oh, excuse me, Mr. Hummuster. We're not actually with him. We just came here to worship you. Very brave.
Where the hell is Ford?
Trisha and Arthur supporting the semi-conscious Zaphod peer into the darkness. Lights appear.
March!
A line of Vogon guards advance on them. Commander calls and Questioner watch on their monitor.
Mr. President, we're here for your protection.
Hey. Fire upon the kidnapper.
They fire. Questioner turns to Quartz.
Commander, the president is the kidnapper. You're going to kill him.
Trisha and Arthur run back to the church doors.
Locked!
They cower behind a pillar. Meanwhile, Ford...
Thank you, darling. I'll be in touch.
...deserts his giant admirer and runs back to Zaphod, who's firing imaginary guns and striking almost rock star poses.
Come on, Zaphod!
Ford, with his towel around his shoulders, drags him behind the pillar where Arthur and Trisha are hiding.
Hey, what a mess! What the hell have you been doing?
I was out doing field research, so they found where we are.
Belgian bummer!
Bummer? They're shooting at us! What are we gonna do?
I have an idea.
Does it involve pushing him out there and running the other way? What? He's the one they want!
Trisha shakes an aerosol.
Trisha, you can't go out there. What you...
And grabs Zaphod.
Back up!
She points the aerosol at Zaphod's bandaged neck.
I have the president!
Could that actually kill him?
I don't think so. It's an aerosol can.
Oh.
Okay, frightened now.
Arthur and Zaphod walk safely past the line of Vogons.
Hi, little guys.
Get her.
The Vogons grab Trisha and carry her off.
Arthur!
Trisha.
Goes to run after her, but Ford yanks him back. The Vogons fire at them as they dash across the Vilt Vodal landscape towards the Heart of Gold. At the entry ramp to the spaceship, Arthur turns round.
Bring her to Volksbier for processing, Captain.
Back on his spaceship, Zaphod jumps about happily, but Arthur is desperate.
They got her, and it's my fault. We have to go. Let's go!
Woo! Let's go!
Zaphod slots the red cube Hummer gave him into the computer.
Computer, take us to Magrathea!
What? No. We've got to go after Trisha. Ooh. Trillion! They've got Trillion, you stupid half-brains! Right, you're coming out. Computer, we don't want to go to Magrathea yet. We want to follow the ships.
Oh, I'd love to, fella, but wouldn't you know it, my guidance system has been deactivated.
Oh, come on!
I'm sorry about that, but it wasn't my fault.
What are you doing on the spaceship?
Ford?
Marvin, I've been talking to the ship's computer.
And?
Marvin lowers his head.
It hates me.
Arthur lunges at Marvin.
Eddie, computer, there must be another way. Is there another way to follow the ship?
Activating emergency escape pod. It's super neat and fun to fly.
An escape pod pops out of the mothership.
Unbelievable.
I mean, okay, Ford.
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you have any idea?
Okay, we'll press this button here.
Okay. No.
Ford, with his towel around his neck, presses another button and a tiny steering wheel pops up.
Good man.
Okay, no.
Good man.
Okay, we're walking.
A small red sphere rocks in space as Ford teaches Arthur how to fly it.
That's worse.
Windscreen wipers come on.
I don't need that.
Okay.
Can you stop the rocket? Okay, Marvin, any ideas?
I have a million ideas. They all point to certain death.
Thanks very much, Marv.
On planet Vogsphere, a Vogon vessel shaped like a huge square pillar slowly comes into land on the rocky grey terrain, among other similar-shaped vessels. A Vogon crab watches from beside a rock pool. The crab scuttles sideways, its eyes on long purple stalks swivel round to watch the arrival of the escape pod. Waving its claws, the crab skips over to the crash-landed small red pod. Its roof-mounted engines look like eyes on stalks, and the crab enthusiastically greets the newcomer from the sky. Until the pod's hatch drops down and crushes it. Zaphod tumbles out, waving his hands exultantly. Ford and Arthur follow.
Megrathia!
Null. We're on the Volgon planet.
Yes, it is. It's Megrathia!
This is Volksphere.
Yeah. Megrathia!
No, it's
yes,
not.
Yes, it is. I know it is.
There is no Megrathia.
Yes, it is.
Ford clamps a helmet onto Zaphod's head.
We did.
They took my head.
They have these on Arcturan mega freighters.
They took my head.
Captains use them when they really need to concentrate.
What is it?
It's a thinking cap.
The top of the helmet is a lemon squeezer. Ford produces a lemon and squeezes.
There you go.
Zaphod frowns almost thoughtfully and hurries off towards the Vogon city.
It should give him some zest for about 10 minutes or so.
Marvin.
Now I'm feeling much better about our predicament.
The Vogon ship touches down in a cloud of dust. A Vogon guard struts out, leading Trisha by a chain attached to her manacled wrists. Meanwhile, Zaphod in his thinking cap, followed by Ford, Arthur, and Marvin, strides across the grey, stony plain towards the city.
By the way, I checked the guide for the best way to rescue a prisoner from Volksphere. It said don't. I'm assuming you have a better plan.
Well, I kind of had this idea that we could...
Ow!
Something flat slaps Arthur.
Did anyone see that?
See what?
What was it?
Nothing. It's, nothing. It's just my imagination.
It happens again.
Okay, right now, stop. So, everyone just stop a minute, please, and look at me. There's...
They all look round.
Definitely something going on here.
Arthur walks on, tentatively waiting for the fly-swat-shaped life form to attack.
Just watch.
There's no sign of the strange thing that slapped him on the face.
Okay. I think we...
Oh! Ah, you too!
Ford rubs his cheek.
Yeah. What was that?
Arthur, clutching his towel, stops himself.
Zaphod, what do you think?
Zaphod licks his lip and raises his hand.
I think... Ah! Dirk, what? What was that? Gee!
I'd make a suggestion, but you wouldn't listen. No one ever does.
I have an idea.
As soon as Ford says idea, a swat springs up on its stalk to slap him. Ford snags it in his towel and snaps it off its stalk. The broken stump slithers back into the ground.
Okay. Don't think. Nobody think. No ideas. No theories. No nothing.
Three swats spring up and slap them.
Crazy Trillian is in there somewhere, and we need an idea to help save her.
I have an idea.
They set off at a charge towards the gigantic, drab, grey, monolithic buildings of the Vogon city, dodging the swats that spring out of the ground to slap them. With short-legged Marvin bringing up the rear, they arrive at the nearest building and peep around the corner. Everything about the place looks as if it's made of crumbling grey municipal concrete. A grey concrete trolley bus with no wheels grinds down a road towards a Vogon waiting at a bus stop and whizzes straight past him without stopping. The space travellers approach the dingy entrance of one of the buildings and flatten themselves against the wall. Marvin glances at a small robot as it glides past without noticing them.
Okay, sir, not thinking. Not thinking. No ideas coming. Oh. All right, this isn't an idea that has any merit at all, but Marvin, can you give me a hand?
They burst into the building.
Okay, where is she?
Arthur brandishes Marvin's severed arm as if it were a gun.
Who? The director of robot arm repair?
In a Vogon interview room.
Trisha Agastik McMillanus of Blood?
No, Trisha Marie McMillan of Earth.
Oh, right.
The bespectacled Vogon clerk types into a computer keyboard. Trisha, still in manacles, calmly sits and waits.
Sorry, no record of Earth.
Galactic Sector ZZ9 plural Z Alpha?
Ow.
Behind a one-way mirror...
She's lying.
Questula and Commander Quartz.
She's skinny and she's pretty and she's lying.
Mm. Oh, yes, here we are, Earth. Oh. Destroyed. Do you have a second home planet?
Destroyed? That's impossible.
That's what it says here. It says it was destroyed to make way for a hyperspace expressway.
The clerk swivels the concrete monitor so that Trisha can see the Earth exploding.
Who in their right mind gives an order to destroy a planet?
In a street, Zaphod grins cheerfully.
He said the gray building, right?
All the buildings are gray.
Give me a hand. Ha ha, very funny. How am I supposed to drive this pod with one arm, stupid human?
Ford, Arf, and Zaphod enter a room full of queuing aliens.
So you need to go back and fill that in. And then make sure when you fill in the facilitating form...
Leave this to me.
That you do paragraphs.
I'm British. I know how to queue.
Arthur joins the back of a long, dole-like queue of weird alien creatures slowly making their way towards a female Vogon in her high and narrow concrete booth. To Zaphod.
You're president, can you do anything?
Presidents don't have power. Their job is to draw attention away from it. No offense. I mean, you're a great guy.
Zaphod takes off his dark glasses.
Hey! How you doing? Hey, it's me, your president! Yeah, what's going on? Nice to see you. Thanks for coming.
Zaphod moves through the queue, shaking hands.
Thank you. Not really, it's me.
Arthur nods to a sad-looking robot.
Kabuki, look at that little thing.
And smiles at a black-lipped llama-like alien.
Give us a kiss. Give us a kiss, darling.
Arthur arrives at the booth.
Hi. I've come about a release of a prisoner.
Prisoner release form.
The Vogon wearily holds out her hand. Arthur's face falls.
I don't believe you.
These are the orders.
The clerk shows Trisha a paper with a presidential seal signed Love and Kisses, Zaphod.
Love and Kisses?
Now, according to the Galactic Penal Code, the punishment for a presidential kidnapping is to be fed to the ravenous bug bladder beast of Troll. Good day.
The clerk gives a callous little wave as a guard hauls Trisha away. And Commander Quartz and Questioner move over to the next one-way mirror, beyond which is a large animal pen.
Wait, there's been some kind of mistake!
Ford reads from the Hitchhiker's Guide.
Tick all the boxes at the right-hand side of the page.
Right. Yeah, I've got it.
Another one!
What to do if you find yourself stuck with no hope of rescue? Consider how lucky you are that life has been good to you so far. Alternatively, if life hasn't been good to you so far, which, given your current circumstances, seems more likely, consider how lucky you are that it won't be troubling you much longer.
Questioner smiles nastily as Trisha is suspended over the pen.
Right. There we go.
Arthur hands over a form.
Kidnapping the president? Oh, no. She's not eligible for release at this time.
OK, right. Look, this is the president.
Oh.
Okay, see? There? He says now the whole kidnapping business was just a horrible misunderstanding.
Oh, yeah.
She didn't mean anything by it. He's ordering you to let her go.
But this isn't a presidential release of prisoner form. Those are blue.
Arthur grits his teeth.
I'll stay here.
Okay, all right. Hold that. Okay.
As a Vogon lowers Trisha towards the bug bladder pen, gobbets of slobber fly into the air. Court smiles.
Oh, he's hungry today.
While Arthur grabs a blue form from a shelf.
That's blue. Right.
Ford and Zaphod chat up the Vogon woman.
I'm not a journalist.
We're just hanging out.
Okay, this is it's Patricia McMillan.
Patricia McMillan. Okay.
She stamps the form.
Sir, it's a release form.
Thank you. She's free to go. Release her!
Vice President Questioner looks at the signature on the release form.
Zaphod's here. Well, that's fine then. Let's just go and get him.
Froth, drool and slobber fly up as Trisha is hoisted out of the bug bladder pen. Zaphod, Ford and Arthur sit on a bench in the waiting area.
Who are we waiting for again?
Ford sympathetically pats Arthur on the knee.
No, I'm serious.
Trisha is thrown into the room.
Trisha...
She gets up and strides straight past Arthur to Zaphod, who opens his arms.
Trisha.
Trio. Hey, come on.
You idiot! You signed the order to destroy Earth.
He did?
I did?
Yes. Love and kisses, Zaphod? You didn't even read it, did you?
Honey, I'm president of the galaxy. I don't get a lot of time for reading.
Arthur reads the order.
An entire planet, my home, destroyed all because you thought somebody wanted your autograph!
Honey, they framed me!
Are you an idiot? Seriously?
It's routine for controlling president!
You knew. Why didn't you tell me?
Well, he threatened me!
Get a backbone, Arthur.
Oh, a backbone? Right, what about coming here to rescue you? Thank you. My idea. Oh, stupid!
He touches his face where the SWAT swatted him. Back at the escape pod, Marvin is in the driving seat.
Got your arm.
How considerate. Right then, all those of you lucky enough to have two arms, hold tight.
Stuck to the side of the pod, the legs of the squashed crab blow away in the slipstream as the pod zooms away between the tall buildings. Questula, Commander Quartz, and a crowd of Vogons watch. Quartz is hit by a piece of flying crab.
The President tests my patience. This time I shall pursue him myself. Ready, my ship.
Fantastic. At last.
Questula scowls in exasperation as she sees Quartz react to the siren.
Oh, that's 1 hour for lunch, everybody.
And off he goes.
I think I'll have soup today.
Back on the Heart of Gold.
The Encyclopedia Galactica, in its chapter on love, states that it is far too complicated to define. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has this to say on the subject of love. Avoid, if at all possible. Unfortunately, Arthur Dent has never read The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Arthur comes into the bathroom.
I'm so sorry.
No, come in.
He stands beside the door to the shower cubicle.
Trillian, I just wanted to say you were right, of course. I should have told you, and I understand totally if you're angry with me, for what it's worth. I know how you must be feeling.
Can you hand me a towel?
Yeah.
He turns his head away as he passes his towel over the door.
Thank you.
Actually, what I was going to say was, if I had said yes to you and gone to Madagascar, then neither of us would be here now. I just thought that might count for something.
They stand on either side of the shower door, not looking at each other.
Doesn't matter.
Rolling his eyes hopelessly, Arthur leaves. He glances back as the door closes behind him. Trisha, who's turned to watch him go, looks away. She steps out of the cubicle dressed only in her towel, her long dark hair loose around her shoulders. She goes over to a mirror and studies her reflection.
All right, computer, take us to...
Ford props Zaphod up.
Where are we headed again?
Okay, I'm gonna get you another lemon.
All right. As Ford rushes off, behind Zaphod's back, the two white mice set coordinates into the improbability drive.
Engaging improbability drive.
No, Zaphod, no. Buttons are not toys. What did you do?
Magrathian coordinates accepted.
Somewhere in space, a series of flowers materialize before turning back into the Heart of Gold. Inside, the crew brush petals from their faces.
Guys, it just blows my circuit to tell you that we're currently in an orbit at an altitude of 300 miles around the legendary planet of Magrathia.
Magrathia! Magrathia!
Zaphod goes to the viewing deck.
Magrathia!
Arthur, Trisha, Zaphod, and Ford gaze open-mouthed through the glass.
Unbelievable.
An ice-blue planet fills the windows.
Incredible.
All turn to Marvin.
It's even worse than I thought it would be.
A holographic head appears.
Greetings. This is a recorded announcement, as we are all out at the moment. The Commercial Council of Magrathia thanks you for your esteemed visit, but regrets that the entire planet is temporarily closed. If you would like to leave your name and a planet where you can be contacted, kindly do so at the totem.
It vanishes.
How can a planet be closed?
Sarkin A, cousin. Okay, computer. Keep going. Take us down.
I'd be happy to.
The hologram reappears.
It is most gratifying that your enthusiasm for our planet continues unabated. As a token of our appreciation, we hope you will enjoy the two thermonuclear missiles we've just sent to converge with your craft. To ensure ongoing quality of service, your death may be monitored for training purposes. Thank you.
Guys, I'm delighted to tell you that there are two thermonuclear missiles heading right for us. If you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and take evasive action.
Everyone is flung against the walls as the ship swerves just in time to avoid the two missiles.
There seems to be something jamming my guidance system. Impact minus 45 seconds.
The missiles zoom in as Trisha frantically punches buttons.
Computer! Do something!
Sure thing, fella. Handing over manual control. Good luck.
A joystick appears. The Heart of Gold screeches to a halt and drops like a stone. The missiles zoom around in a tight circle.
I need some help!
Zaphod grabs the joystick.
I can't do this without my third arm!
Arthur and Ford slide round as Zaphod makes the ship swerve.
No, Arthur! Get my head!
Zaphod is thrown from the controls.
Help!
ship and missiles whoosh through fluffy clouds.
Did we lose them?
No. They're coming right at us.
Arthur points to the improbability drive.
Oh, no, I just press this thing!
No, we're not fully back to normal yet!
So what will happen then?
I don't know!
No, don't do it! We're here! Don't tell him where he'll send us, don't do it!
The missiles close in on the heart of gold.
You've shot it, Oak.
No!
Arthur hits the drive.
Wow.
Zaphod gets up.
Where are we?
Slowly, the others get to their feet.
Exactly where we were.
And the missiles?
Apparently, they've turned into a bowl of petunias. And a very surprised-looking whale.
At an improbability factor of 8,767,128 to 1 against.
We have no normality.
Normality, right. We can talk about normality till the cows come home.
Ford gazes out of the window.
What is normal?
What's home?
What are cows?
Rubber covers here to store my normality.
It is important to note that suddenly, and against all probability, a sperm whale had been called into existence several miles above the surface of an alien planet. And since this is not a naturally tenable position for a whale, this innocent creature had very little time to come to terms with its identity. This is what it thought as it fell.
Ah! Whoa! What's happening? Who am I? Why am I here? What's my purpose in life? What do I mean by who am I? Okay, calm down, get a grip now. Ooh, this is an interesting sensation. What is it? It's a sort of a tingling in my... Well, I suppose I better start finding names for things. Let's call it, tail. Yeah, tail. And hey, what's this roaring sound? Whooshing past what I'm suddenly going to call my head. Wind. Is that a good name? It'll do. Yay, this is really exciting. I'm dizzy with anticipation. Or is it the wind? There's an awful lot of that now, isn't it? And what's this thing coming towards me very fast? So big and flat and round, it needs a big wide-sounding name like ow. Ound, round, ground. That's it. Ground. I wonder if it'll be friends with me. Hello, ground.
The whale lands.
Curiously, the only thing that went through the mind of the bowl of petunias as it fell was, oh no, not again. Many have speculated that if we knew exactly why the bowl of petunias had thought that, we should know a lot more about the nature of the universe than we do now.
The ship has landed on a snow-covered surface next to a Welcome to Magrathea sign.
What are those things? They're portals to another dimension. Right. I suppose this portal has central heating, does it?
The three portals look like three detached, hollowed-out aircraft engines grouped in a circle with icicles hanging from each rim.
This is the one. This will all end in tears. I just know it.
Zaphod, in a white fur coat, runs his hands along one frozen portal entrance.
Hey! Whoa!
He leaps back as a swirling vortex starts up inside.
Yes! Here we go!
We can't just step into that! We don't even know where it leads! If we pick the wrong one, we come back, we pick another one, it's no biggie! What? Yeah, it's a big biggie, Ford! A big biggie! I mean, what if it rips us all into tiny little atomic particle thingies?
This is the right one! I have a hunch!
Ford!
His hunches are good!
Arthur! I say we go!
Go with a hunch of a man whose brain is fueled by lemons! This is suicide!
Hey, I think I resent that!
I don't care what...
Trisha, who's walked away from the squabbling men with arms folded, turns round and runs straight past them into the vortex.
Have you ever tried yoga?
Brilliant!
I think that's supposed to happen!
Arthur, with a towel around his neck, runs to the other end of the portal, but she's gone.
She's gone! Ford, she's gone!
Ford touches his shoulder.
Arthur, don't panic!
Ford jumps into the portal.
Ford! Hey! Highway 3!
Zaphod follows him. Arthur hides his eyes and skips nervously. He takes a few steps away from the swirling vortex, breathes in deeply, looking over his shoulder, like someone plucking up the courage to dive under a cold shower. Marvin watches impassively as Arthur rushes at the portal and leaps through it. He flies straight out of the other end, landing with his face in the snow. He staggers to his feet in his snow-covered dressing gown and pajamas, his towel round his neck, and walks back into the portal. The vortex has vanished. Arthur thumps the portal entrance in frustration.
Come on, just start!
I told you this would all end in tears.
Thank you! Thank you!
Marvin droops his enormous head as Arthur grits his teeth. Trisha and Ford have arrived on another planet. Zaphod lands next to them. He picks himself up.
Far out! Far out!
They climb the ancient steps towards the giant computer.
Deep thought!
Meanwhile, Arthur and Marvin sit side by side in the snow, watching the sunset.
This is how it's all going to end, is it? Hey.
A figure passes behind them.
Me? Alone on a dead planet with a manically depressed robot.
You think you've got problems? What are you supposed to do if you are a manically depressed robot?
Excuse me.
Arthur scurries off, then turns to face the tall figure, whose face is completely shrouded in a hooded fur coat.
Who are you?
What? No, my name is not important. You must come with me.
Get away.
Terrible events are afoot. You must come or you'll be late.
Late what for?
What? No.
The hood is raised.
What's your name, Earthman?
Dent. Arthur Dent.
Well, late as in the late Dent Arthur Dent. It's a sort of threat. Do you see? No.
No.
Your friends are safe. You can trust me.
Well, trust a man who won't tell me his name.
The long-haired man shrugs.
Okay. My name is Slaty Bartfast.
Arthur stares.
I said it wasn't important.
Slaty Bartfast nods morosely.
So my friends are safe?
Let me show you.
I could calculate your chances of survival, but you won't like it.
Arthur considers Marvin's suggestion and turns to Slaty Bartfast, who gives him a deadpan shrug, gestures to one of the other portals and sets it running. Alone on the frozen planet, Marvin sits in the shelter of the third portal and watches the sunset. Meanwhile, Slaty Bartfast leads Arthur into a showroom of plans and models for planets.
Did you know we built planets? Oh, yes. Fascinating trade.
He points to a model.
Doing the coastlines was always my favourite. And we used to have endless fun doing the little fiddly bits around fields. But then the galactic economy collapsed, and seeing that custom-built planets are a bit of a luxury commodity. Anyway, you must come with me because there's been a terrible mix-up with your planet. Best-laid plans of mice, you know.
And men.
What?
Best-laid plans of mice and men.
Slaty Bartfast gives a hollow laugh.
Yes, well, I don't think men have got much to do with it.
Here.
He goes into the next room and opens the metal gate of a waist-high safety cage, the size and shape of a hot air balloon basket. It vibrates gently. Arthur steps inside and the gaunt, long-haired planet designer follows him. Slaty Bartfast presses a lever and punches some buttons. Like a fairground ghost ride, the cage starts to move along a slot in the floor, towards a tunnel closed off by thick polythene door flaps. As they pass through them, an identical empty cage returns through the set of door flaps at the other end of the room. Arthur and Slaty Bartfast enter a long dark tunnel illuminated by occasional dim red lights.
I must warn you, we're going to pass through, well, a sort of gateway thing.
Huh?
It may disturb you. It scares the willies out of me.
The cage accelerates to an incredible speed and a light appears at the end of the tunnel. They burst out of the tunnel into an unimaginably vast workshop, in which planets are being constructed, each one suspended in a web of scaffold. The cage flies high above a half-completed world, where curved plates are still being attached to a spherical skeleton. An enormous section of mountain range is suspended on huge shackles, waiting to be lowered into position.
Welcome to our factory floor!
Arthur gazes about, stupefied, clamping his hand over his mouth and blinking wide-eyed, uncertain whether to laugh or cry. Slaty Bartfast, his grey hair blowing about his face in the breeze, smiles in gratification at Arthur's astonishment. Meanwhile, Zaphod, Ford, and Trisha climb to the top of the overgrown ancient stone steps to Deep Thought's platform high above the jungle.
Yeah, this is it.
They go through the ceremonial gates and approach the podium. Zaphod flings his arms wide open.
Oh, great! Deep Thought! We have traveled long!
There's a small TV on the podium.
Or have you calculated the ultimate question of life, the universe, and everything?
Oh, no.
What?
I've been watching TV.
Oh.
I designed another computer to do that.
The TV cartoon stops.
Oh, right! I forgot. Is it here?
No, it's not here. It's another world.
It's on another world.
It is another world, stupid. Or at least it was, until the Vogons destroyed it to make way for a hyperspace expressway.
Well, Zaphod frowns.
Okay. You sure you don't have the question or a way to, you know, access it or something? Because I think I've done, like, a lot to get here.
Oh, shush, shush. The show's back on.
Zaphod hiccups and backs away towards the gates.
Well, I don't want to bother you, so I'm going to get stuff. Great. I'm going to go find something else for my entire life to be about.
Zaphod! Zaphod!
Yeah?
There's the gun.
Gun?
That Hummus sent you for. You gave him your head.
Why'd I do that?
Okay.
That's stupid.
Oh, Deep Thought! We were told that there is a gun.
A section of steps in Deep Thought's plinth start to retract one by one, revealing a small doorway. Back in the planet factory, the safety cage zooms along above a colossal construction line of moving conveyor belts.
There you are.
Slaty Bartfast points ahead.
Look familiar?
It's the Earth.
So it wasn't destroyed?
Actually, it was. This is a backup. Earth Mark II.
Arthur tries to get his head around this.
So you made the Earth?
Not me alone, but I did my part. Ever heard of a place? I think it's called Norway. That was one of mine. I got an award for it.
The cradle plummets down a scaffold tower towards the backup Earth surface. They stop by a man in overalls on a ladder painting Ayers Rock red.
Oh, all right, Frank.
That's Frank.
They zoom off again.
Aha! They've nearly finished the oceans.
On a cliff, a worker in a hard hat is filling the ocean from a large hose. In a stone chamber under Deep Thought's plinth, Ford picks up a large rocket-like gun.
Zaphod, here, it's set.
He takes it over to Zaphod.
Just like Homer said. Yeah, now you can go get your head back.
Hey, Ford.
Hey.
It's been nice knowing you, Zark and Frood.
No!
The gun goes off, hitting Ford.
Dude.
Hey, man! You know, you must really be frustrated, you know. You go through all you've gone through. You come all this way, you don't get an answer, which means no money and no fame, which you deserve, man.
The point of view gun, conveniently, does precisely what its name suggests.
Ford fidgets and hovers in a strange manner.
That is, if you point it at someone and pull the trigger, they instantly see things from your point of view.
Give me that thing.
Trisha takes it.
It was designed by Deep Thought, but commissioned by a consortium of intergalactic angry housewives, who, after countless arguments with their husbands, were sick to the teeth of ending those arguments with the phrase, "You just don't get it, do you?"
Ford blasts Zaphod with a point of view gun.
And you're right, I shouldn't be so upset because life goes on, you know, and I should just go on with it.
Shoot him again.
Hey, whoa.
He does.
Hitchhiking's good. Towels are good, too. Hey, say what?
That is brilliant.
What's going on?
I can see why Hama Kavula would want one of these. Well, we better get back. Arthur's waiting.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, I do, especially since we're both somewhat of an endangered species now, thanks to you.
Why so edgy, baby doll? Relax.
Why so edgy? You want to know why I'm edgy?
She blasts him with a gun.
Of course you're edgy. Your planet's been blown up, and you've been tooling around the galaxy with the guy who signed the order.
She fires again.
You actually wanted to know the question because you always wanted to know if there was more to life, and now you're crushed because you find out there really isn't.
Zaphod rolls his eyes with the effort of all this truth.
Fantastic, man. Psychedelic.
She fires again.
You've got no home, no family, and you're stuck with me, another in a long line of men who doesn't really get you.
Zaphod's eyes narrow perceptively.
That's not true. That's it. And you're worried you might have blown it with the one guy who really does. Hey, oops.
Trisha's eyes well up.
Oh, baby doll. Give me that thing.
He grabs the gun and points it at her. She heaves a sigh.
It won't affect me. I'm already a woman.
In the wall behind Zaphod, a stone slab rises up, revealing a second chamber. Zaphod spins round, points the gun, and peers in.
Hey, it's okay. It's only a couple little mice.
On the backup Earth, a huge mountain bursts through clouds.
Voila! Oh, Himalayas! Good, eh?
Arthur gapes. The safety cage zooms off again.
Earthman, you must realize that the planet you lived on was commissioned, paid for, and run by mice.
They skim past a man sifting sand in a desert.
When you say mice, do you mean the little furry white creatures with whiskers, ears, cheese?
Yeah, but they're merely protrusions into our dimension of hyper-intelligent pan-dimensional beings. I mean, I don't know this cheese of which you speak, but they were there on Earth as mice experimenting on you.
Oh, I see where you become confused now. You see, we were experimenting on them.
Ah, no. Well, yeah, no. I gather that's what they wanted you to think, but you were actually elements in their computer program.
Arthur frowns.
Actually, this explains a lot, you know. All my life, I've had this strange feeling that there's something big and sinister going on in the world.
No, that's perfectly normal paranoia. Everyone in the universe gets that.
They whiz over a forest where a man is growing mushrooms.
Perhaps I'm old and tired, but I think that the chances of finding out what's actually going on are so absurdly remote that the only thing to do is to say hang the sense of it and keep yourself busy. I'd much rather be happy than right any day.
And are you?
No. Well, that's where it all falls down, of course.
The yellow safety cage crests the white cliffs of Dover and flies over English countryside, crisscrossed by meandering streams and dotted with trees.
Here you are, then.
Salati Bhatvas gestures ahead as their steel transporter slows. A strange expression comes across Arthur's face. They come to a stop a couple of feet above the ground. Around them, workmen in orange overalls and helmets are planting out a garden.
Is this?
Salati Bhatvas lowers the cage, opens the gate, and nods. Arthur steps down onto the country lane in front of his brand new cottage and caravan. He goes towards the white picket fence and glances back incredulously.
It's all there. You know, it all works. Welcome home.
Arthur, smiling in wonder, walks past the workman hoeing the borders, and clutching his towel, he opens the door. Inside, beneath a banner saying "Welcome home, Arthur," is a table piled with party food, a teapot, and the point of view gun. Zaphod, Ford, and Trisha are sitting at the table, stuffing their faces.
There you are.
What are you doing? What happened to you? Is that tea?
First, our host attacked us.
Right.
But then, they made up for it by making us this amazing meal. So everything, try everything. It's delicious.
Arthur sips his tea.
Oh, come on, that's lovely.
We're glad you like it, Earth creature.
Arthur looks at the two white mice by the point of view gun and puts down his cup, smiling weakly.
Talking
mice.
Cool. Sit,
Earthman. Oh, thank you. Thank you for that.
He sits in the chair that slides towards him.
Please, drink.
Excuse me. Is there anything else?
No, we're quite happy, thank you.
Good. I'll be outside, so... You were right.
Arthur points to the mice.
Please, drink.
Good. He was right.
Now, to business.
To business!
Ford and Zaphod sheepishly obey.
Sorry.
As you know, we've spent a lot of time on your planet looking for this ultimate question, only to have it blow up in our faces. Literally. Which is why you're here. We've been offered a lucrative contract to do several 5D TV chat shows.
Right.
But here's the point. We must have product. We need the ultimate question, or at least one that sounds ultimate.
Of course.
Yes, we've rebuilt the planet, and now all we need is the missing piece of the puzzle. Which happens to be your brain.
Right.
Or tea.
Yeah, sorry, did you just say you'd need my brain?
Yes, to complete the program.
He looks over at the others. They're visibly drooping.
Okay, but you can't have my brain. I'm using it.
Hardly.
Hardly. Cheeky mouse.
helmet, clamps onto his head, bands tighten around his wrists and ankles.
Ford!
He's asleep.
Trillian!
So she...
Ford.
And Ford...
What was in that food?
A machine rises out of the fruit bowl.
What was in my tea?
Don't worry. You won't feel a thing.
Two small circular saws extend towards Arthur's head.
Just wait a sodding minute. You want a question that goes with the answer 42. Right, well, what about 1/6 times 7? Or, how many vogons does he take to change a light bulb? Here's one. How many roads must the man walk down?
The blades stop.
Hey, that's not bad.
Fine.
Arthur closes his eyes.
Fine, take it. My head is filled with questions, and I can assure you no answer to any one of them has ever brought me one iota of happiness. Except for one. The one. The only question I've ever wanted an answer to. Is she the one?
He looks at Tricia.
The answer bloody well isn't 42, it's yes.
She sleeps on.
Undoubtedly. Unequivocally, unabashedly, yes. And for 1 week... 1 week in my sad little blip of an existence. It made me happy.
Tricia wakes and smiles at him sleepily.
It's a good answer.
Rubbish, we don't want to be happy. We want to be famous.
Yeah.
What is all this is she the one tribe?
Take his brain!
No, don't take the brain! Don't take the brain, mice!
The saw blades advance towards Arthur's skull. With a massive effort, he tears himself free and knocks the machine away. Seyfried, Ford and Tricia wake. The mice try to fire the point of view gun.
It wasn't me!
What are you doing?
I'm famous.
Shoot him! Quickly! Shoot him!
Arthur picks up the teapot and smashes it down on the mice. He lifts it up and stares at the two tiny girl-like, mouse-like bodies, dematerializing.
Em will be sick.
Ford pulls a face and sticks out his tongue.
Belgium.
All four of them cock their heads, listening. The crockery on the table starts to shake.
Follow me.
He picks up his towel, Tricia grabs the point of view gun, and they rush outside. Hundreds of Vogons are at the fence, led by Commander Pulse and Vice President Questula. Marvin is with them.
Thanks a lot for leaving me behind. Though I can't say I blame you.
Mr. President, we're here for your protection.
Oh, hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Fire!
Questula tries to stop the shooting.
No!
Arthur and the others dive behind the caravan for cover. Tricia drops the gun.
I don't see what all the fuss is about. Vogons are the worst marksmen in the galaxy. Ooh.
For God's sake, stop!
Ceasefire!
There's a huge charred hole in the back of Marvin's head. He turns accusingly to the massed ranks of Vogons and points his finger.
Now I've got a headache.
He slumps onto the lawn beside the point of view gun. The green light in his eyes dies. Tricia peeps out from the caravan.
Marvin!
Oh, no.
More Vogons appear at the back gate. Ford charges them.
Towel! Run away!
Zaphod leaps inside the caravan.
Somebody get us out of here!
How do you drive this thing?
Hey, what's going on?
Tricia peers out at Marvin and the gun.
We need that gun.
Zaphod fiddles with the cooker.
Come on, get this ship started.
Go, sir!
Tricia and Arthur run for the gun.
Oh, fire! Fire!
Fire! Fire!
The Vogons open fire at Tricia and Arthur, who dive back into the caravan.
Oh, he's knocked it back from the other side! We'll have to go the other way!
Flashes of green Vogon fire rip through the caravan. Inside, everyone dives for cover. As Questula tries to stop the shooting, the caravan slowly tips over and crashes onto its side. On the lawn, the green light in Marvin's eyes flickers back to life again. He rises to his feet with the point of view gun in his hand. Questula dives for cover as Marvin turns the gun on the Vogons. Commander Quartz bows his head.
Oh, I feel so depressed.
I can't face another day.
Tens of thousands of Vogons topple onto their backs.
What's the point?
The chassis falls off the caravan, leaving a gaping hole. Arthur helps Tricia out onto the lawn.
You're right.
Yeah.
Ford follows them. Zaphod remains inside, looking around the wrecked and smoldering interior.
Sorry about your spaceship, Arthur.
Vice President Questula gets to her feet and looks around at the depressed Vogons. Tricia and Arthur come over to Marvin.
Marvin, you saved our lives.
I know.
wretched, isn't it?
Later, workmen cram the last few miserable Vogons into a truck and send it on its way.
You've got to ask yourself, what's the point?
Take it away!
Other workmen are putting the two-story cottage back to rights and wheeling a brand new caravan into place. Slati Bartfast, talking into his mobile, hurries down the garden path after Arthur and Tricia.
But it's not going to... Well, I'll just ask. I've just been informed by some of the lads that since we're so near completion,
yeah,
we're gonna go ahead and finish Earth.
Oh.
So we can put it back exactly as it was when you left.
Yeah.
You know? Unless there's anything you want to change.
Tricia gives Arthur a private smile.
Something you think your planet could do without.
Arthur looks around.
Yeah.
Then turns back.
Me.
Oh.
Hello? No. As is. Yeah, leave it.
Yeah. Arthur turns to Tricia with a how about it shrug.
Let's go somewhere.
Definitely. Where did you have in mind?
I know there's a great restaurant at the end of the universe.
Ford grins at them.
I am a little peckish.
They go over to Slati Bartfast's safety cage.
I need to go to Hermes. He's got something in mind.
And climb in beside Zaphod and Questula, who's giggling girlishly.
Confused.
Don't worry, baby. We'll sort it out.
All right. Let's trip to that fantastic, baby. Just you and me. Come on.
You got your towel?
Come on.
Yeah. Why? Am I going to need it?
Only always.
Right. Right, yeah. Because I wouldn't want to go anywhere without my wonderful towel.
Tricia looks at Arthur with sparkling eyes. And they kiss.
Okay, hold tight.
The workmen wave as the cage rises into the air.
Stand by for commencement of life cycle. In 3, 2, 1.
Hooray!
Lightning flashes and the backup Earth comes to life. A single-celled amoeba divides. A green shoot pushes up. A butterfly bursts from its chrysalis. A plant flowers. Oceans swell. And fish swim. The earth teems with life. A spider weaves. Birds fly. Clouds scud. A kangaroo bounds. A cheetah hops. Flamingos flap. A bee buzzes. A crab crawls. Snakes coil. And in Arthur's local, the landlord comes alive and people in cafes start chatting. Cities thrum with activity, and as the sun goes down and the moon rises, dolphins fall from the sky and plunge into the ocean. Meanwhile...
Not that anyone cares what I say, but the restaurant is at the other end of the universe.
Engaging the improbability drive, the Heart of Gold morphs into a gnome, a JCB, a fez, a bust of Beethoven, a pipe, a teacup, and finally into the head of author Douglas Adams. The stars fade from sight, and a caption appears. For Douglas. This audio description was written and produced by Stephen Dobbin and Veronica Hicks for IMS. The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy was produced by Gary Barber and Roger Birnbaum. Nick Goldsmith, Jay Roach, and Jonathan Grookman. Co-producers Todd Arno, Caroline Hewitt, Rebecca Talbot. Executive producers Douglas Adams, Robbie Stamp, Derek Evans. Casting by Susie Figgis. Music by Joby Talbot. Costume designer Sammy Sheldon. Editor Nevin Howie. Production designer Joel Collins. Director of photography Igor Janulilo. The cast in alphabetical order. Voice of the Whale, Bill Bailey. Questioner Rontok, Anna Chancellor. Marvin, Warwick Davis. Ford Prefect, Mos Def. Tricia Trillian, Zoe Deschanel. Hub Customer, Sue Elliott. Arthur Dent, Martin Freeman. Narrator, Stephen Fry. Voice of Vogon Yeltz, Richard Griffiths. Fook, Dominique Jackson. Ghostly Image, Simon Jones. Eddie the Computer, Thomas Lennon. Bulldozer Driver, Mark Longhurst. Reporter, Kenny McDonald. Hama Kavula, John Malkovich. Voice of Vogon Quartz, Ian McNeice. Voice of Deep Thought, Helen Mirren. Slati Bartfast, Bill Nighy. Prosser, Steve Pemberton. Voice of Marvin, Alan Rickman. Zaphod Beeblebrox, Sam Rockwell. Lunkwill, Jack Stanley. Additional Vogon Voices, The League of Gentlemen. Voice of Vogon Interpreter, Mark Wilson. Barman, Albie Woodington. Voice on Arthur's Vodafone, Veronica Hicks. Vogon Minion, Mason Ball. Vogon Guards, Jerome Blake, Ben Utley, Patrick Walker. Vogons, Caro Cachetta, Catherine Smee. Vogon High Command, Philip Eason, Mark Jeffries, Jane Garnier, Nigel Plaskett, Robert Tigner. Vogon Captain, William Todd Jones. Stunt builder, Barry Dowden. US casting, Marcia S. Cross. Animated guide by Shinola. Cost consultant, Elizabeth Hurley. First assistant director, second unit, Terry Bamba. Second assistant director, Tamana Bleasdale. Second assistant director, second unit, David Kane. Crowd assistant director, Chris Croucher. Additional third assistant director, David Desio. Third assistant director, second unit, Fraser Fennell Ball. Assistant director, Mark Hopkins. Assistant director, Ian Lawrence. Second unit director, Dominic Leung. Third assistant director, second unit, Terence Madden. Third assistant director, Samar Pollitt. First assistant director, Richard Wheeler. Art direction, Alan Cassie, Daniel May. All the fish. Graphics from The Hitchhiker's Guide appear alongside the credits.
It is, of course, well known that careless talk costs lives. But the full scale of the problem is not always appreciated. For instance, at the very moment that Arthur Dent said, "I wouldn't want to go anywhere without my wonderful towel," a freak wormhole opened up in the fabric of the space-time continuum and carried his words far, far back in time across almost infinite reaches of space to a distant galaxy where strange and warlike beings were poised on the brink of frightful interstellar battle. The two opposing leaders, resplendent in their black jeweled battle shorts, were meeting for the last time when a dreadful silence fell. And at that very moment, the words, "I wouldn't want to go anywhere without my wonderful towel," drifted across the conference table. Unfortunately, in their native tongue, this was the most appalling insult imaginable. So the two opposing battle fleets decided to settle their few remaining differences in order to launch a joint attack on our galaxy, now positively identified as the source of the offending remark. For thousands of years, the mighty starships tore across the empty wastes of space and finally dived screaming onto the planet Earth, where, due to a terrible miscalculation of scale, the entire battle fleet was accidentally swallowed by a small dog. Those who study the complex interplay of cause and effect in the history of the universe say that this sort of thing is going on all the time.
The screen shows the Hitchhiker's logo of a raised thumb superimposed upon a ringed planet, and the guide switches off. Songs. So Long and Thanks for All the Fish, written by Joby Talbot, Garth Jennings and Christopher Austin. Produced by Joby Talbot. Vocals by Hilary Sumner, Remy Ominiti and the RSVP Voices. Magic Moments, written by Burt Bacharach and Hal David, performed by Perry Como. Shoo-Rah, Shoo-Rah, written by Alan Toussaint and performed by Betty Wright. Here I Am, Come and Get Me, written by Al Green and Maybon Hodges, performed by Al Green. Journey of the Sorcerer, written by Bernard Leadon. Soundtrack is available on Hollywood Records. Filmed at Elstree Film and Television Studios, England. The producers would like to thank Jane Belson, Bob Bookman, Tim Browse, Nigel Godric, Yoz Graham, Spike Yonzi, Jim Lynn, Maggie Phillips, Sean Soller, Ed Victor, Billy Weber, and Loro Parke S.A. The executive in charge of production for Spyglass Entertainment was Jeffrey Chanoff. Copyright 2005, Touchstone Pictures. This motion picture was created by Hitchhiker Productions, Inc. Distributed by Buena Vista Pictures Distribution.